And now let us hear the reading of the Word of God, verses from the 20th chapter of the book of Exodus, and a few verses from the 21st chapter. And God spoke all of these words and said, I am the Lord thy God, the one who brought thee up out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thyself any graven image, or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or earth beneath, or in the waters under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them. For I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, and I visit the iniquity of the fathers upon the children, even to the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, though I show loving kindness unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless who beareth his name in vain. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, but the seventh is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou nor thy son, nor thy daughter, thy manservant, thy maidservant, thy cattle, nor the stranger that is within thy gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that in them is, but rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. Thou shalt not do murder. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. And all the peoples perceived the thunderings and the lightnings, and the voice of the trumpet, and the mountain was filled with smoke. And when the people saw it, they trembled and stood afar off. And they said to Moses, you speak with us, and we will hear, but do not let God speak with us, for surely we die. And Moses said to the people, fear not, for God has come to prove you, and that his fear may be before you, and that you sin not. And the people stood afar off, and Moses drew near unto the thick darkness where God was. And then a few verses from the 21st chapter. This is a catalogue of various injunctions, some positive, some negative, in which God is giving these poor primitive people some little hints as to how eventually they might really fulfill the moral law which we've just read. We can call some of these laws ceremonial, some of them civil. All of them involve a moral obligation. But here are some of them in the 21st chapter. He that smiteth a man, so that as a result he dies, shall surely be put to death. The 15th verse. And if he that smiteth his father, and he that smiteth his father or his mother, shall surely be put to death. He that stealeth a man, the earliest reference to kidnapping, he that stealeth a man or selleth him, or if he be found in his hand, shall surely be put to death. He that curseth his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. And if men strive together and hurt a woman with child so that her fruit depart, yet no harm follow, he shall surely be fined according to the woman's husband shall lay upon him. 23rd verse. But if any harm follow, then shalt thou give life for life, eye for eye, hand for hand, foot for foot, burning for burning, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. And may God bless to our hearts the reading and the hearing of this portion of His Word. Let us picture the situation. Several hundreds of thousands of people, men, women, and children, and also cattle, who with their ancestors for 430 years or so were under Egyptian bondage, who had been for centuries out of contact with Yahweh, the Lord, the true God, whose concept of righteousness and truth and love and mercy and justice were absolutely nil. Here they are, by God's matchless grace, having been set free from bondage. But they are still a primitive, dissolute, irresponsible, unguided, perplexed people. And so, as I said before, God, in gracious love and mercy, determined not only to save them from bondage, but after that, not to let them wander astray, but to give them heaven-directed rules for their guidance. And so the 20th chapter gives us what we call the Decalogue, the moral law. Here God is saying to His people, I have redeemed you, because I loved you with an everlasting love. Now, therefore, I want you to be like me. So, if you're willing to accept the challenge to be like me, then do this. Will you do it? And the people took solemn assembly and said, all that the Lord hath said, we will do. But of course, God knew much better than the people that they were utterly unable, really, to fulfill their obligation. They said, yes, we'll do it. But they were not aware of all that it would take, that they were really not able to do it. Nevertheless, God, I'm sure, was wise in getting them to obligate themselves. All that the Lord had said, we will do. And so He gives them the moral law, which we're going to talk about in subsequent Sundays, God willing. But notice how those laws are given. The first four of them deal primarily with a man's responsibility to God. The first commandment deals with God's being, the fact that God is. The Bible never argues whether there is a God or not. Genesis 1 doesn't say, now let's see if we can list the arguments for the existence of God. In the beginning, God. Period. And so the first commandment deals with the very essence and nature of God. He is. But the second commandment deals with not only recognizing God as the only God, but gives directions as to the proper way to worship Him. And of course, the second commandment, which is one of the longest, as you perhaps remember, is given, and it must be taken in the light of its context. Here are these recently redeemed people from Egyptian bondage, who are surrounded by all kinds of foreign nations with their various idols and gods of wood and stone and stuff. And so God, since He is the only God, is jealous to be the object of worship. And He is right, of course. And so to warn the people against yielding to, bowing down before inane, helpless gods of wood and stone, thou shalt not make for thyself any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, earth beneath, or in the waters under the earth. That's simply a nice way of saying never any at all, anywhere. And on the second commandment goes to show the fact that God is a jealous God in the right sense of the word jealous. And my character is such, he says, that those who go by what I say are automatically bringing to themselves spiritual blessing. I don't have to call a special meeting to decide what good to do for you. When you obey my law, automatically good comes. But if you do not love me and obey my commandments, automatically the law boomerangs on you and you'll be in trouble. But I want you to be like me. And so worship me according to my dictates, not according to your liking. And I think this is an important thing for our day and time, my friends. Is our worship altogether in keeping with what God seems to require it to be? And then the third recognizes God's name. Always the name was a very important thing. You shall not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. And I hasten to add again that this does not deal with profanity. The Bible deals with profanity, all right, but not in this commandment. The verb that's translated bastardzo means you shall not bear the name of Christian in vain. You shall not say belong to me and don't act like it. You shall not bear the name of God. You shall not parade as a Christian when really you are not. And this, of course, is where God insists that those who call Him by name shall also somehow or other have something of His character in Himself. You shall not bear my name in vain. God's name. And then God's day. Remember the Sabbath day. You see, this very first imperative, remember, indicates that it's something that existed before. This is a commandment which had been given long before the law. Remember this Sabbath law. And of course, in 1970, and in our day and time, we need to take a very, very solid look at the fourth commandment. These are not laws rigidly stated, and are not they are inflexible in a sense of the word and flexible in a sense of the word. The commandment is not, according to Jesus' own interpretation of it, forbidding activity on the Lord's day. When I used to visit my grandfather years ago on Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock, we began to close down activities. My friend playing baseball across the street, but there we had to sit down on the porch and look pretty because we were approaching the Sabbath. And we did that approaching it. Now, you just can imagine what we did, what we didn't do, when it came. It was really a day of mourning. We were almost required to sit in the corner and look like we were mad, whether we were or not. It was that kind of stringent, rigid, literal interpretation which made the Sabbath day a horror for my brother and me, who visited our grandfathers very often every summer. We dreaded for Sunday to come. And yet, we hear the hymn, O Day of Rest and Gladness. But the way it was observed in the Ancient of Days, it was not such a day of blessing. And yet, my friends, I'm glad that my grandfather, while he, I'm sure, made some blunders about just how this commandment should be interpreted in the light of the New Testament, yet he did instill into our young lives and hearts the fact that somehow or other God expects Sunday to be different from Tuesday. He made Tuesday also. But Sunday, somehow or other, must be different. And this is where we come in. Now, by being different, I do not mean that we've got to insist like that fine city in mid-South Carolina, Due West, where they will not allow the railroad to operate through that city on Sunday. You can come to the city limit, but you change your schedule when you get to the city limit. You don't operate through this city on Sunday. Well, of course, that posed for the railroad considerable problems, schedule-wise and otherwise, and passenger reservations and all that. But I'm trying to say that this rule is a spiritual rule. And if every piece of machinery that operates the vastness of our economic system now were cut down, shut down on Friday, talk about inflation, we wouldn't have anything at all. And so these laws are not rigid in that sense of the word. But somehow we Christians have got to see to it that the Sabbath day is different. And this is the challenge that I make to you. A day when we can somehow, ought somehow, those of us who can, rejoice and be glad in it. Visit our friends, visit the shut-ins. Be especially concerned with deeds of kindness and love and mercy. And in 1,001 ways, we can honor the spirit of this law. Is it right to do? Is it wrong to do right on the Sabbath? To do good on the Sabbath, said Jesus. And so if you can observe the Sabbath as Jesus did, I think we'd be safe. Now, the individual New Testament interpretations of the Decalogue we shall look into later. But this morning, in closing, I want to call your attention to just two or three of these laws that are not listed as moral laws, but they're closely tied in. They're called the ceremonial laws. They're laws which had to be enacted to deal with the kind of society that existed at that time. And so therefore these laws, many of them, must be looked at in a sort of a relative way. And yet I do not mean to be dispensing relativism at all. Several of them I call to your attention here as I read a while ago. The 21st chapter of Exodus says, "Thou shalt not do murder." Now, the word for murder is not the word for kill. I admit, if you're murdered, you're just as good and dead as if you were killed. But the point that I'm making is that the commandment does not forbid the taking of life. Let us remember that. God is the one who gives, and God can order it to be taken away. Let's please remember that. Thou shalt do no murder. And the context of this passage, if we had the time to read it, would show a premeditated thing. If a man lies, wait, I'm going to wait till this fellow comes in, I'm going to butt him. It's a plan. I know what I want to do, and I know how I want to do it, and I'm going to do it. This is a murderous killing act. The soldier is not a murderer. Now, no military man has paid me to make this public pronouncement, but there is no premeditated murder when the soldier shoots his gun. He doesn't know the man. There's no reason for him to love him or hate him or know anything about him. But war is the same thing, all right, as Sherman said it was. No question about that. At the same time, the soldier is not guilty of this commandment. But notice in the 16th verse it is, of the second of the 21st chapter, "You shall not steal a man," where apparently in the the custom of some of the earlier tribes. They raised money even then by stealing a man and saying, now if you'll give me this, you'll get him back. Man-stealing, kidnapping. It's one of the most vicious things that our society has to deal with, whether the one kidnapped is killed or not. To be taken captive by another and held for ransom is vicious. And the Old Testament says, death is the penalty. Think about that. And once more, among the ceremonial laws, which involve spiritual principles, moral principles, the text says, you shall not permit a witch to live, nor practice sorcery or necromancy. And I suppose in this generation I put in the last 2, 3, or 4 years, we've had more evidence of witchcraft, demonology, Satanology, the occult. My friends, I want to tell you that the Bible takes a very low view of this and forbids its practice. And yet, many people, some apparently claiming the sponsorship of the church, are engaging this kind of thing. And so be careful for witchcraft. One final thing in closing that also is just as modern as tomorrow morning's newspaper. Neither shall you join a mob to run riot. Ever hear of a riot? Mob violence? Don't you see, my friends, when it's just natural, when sinful people, a group of them that get together, when one man says, let's kill, everybody says, yes, let's kill. That's perfectly natural. And without any thought, without recognizing, without rationalizing or giving it any thought at all, join the leader. Let's kill. This, too, is a vicious thing. And yet God knew that his people, having just returned from captivity, would be tempted to do all of these prevailing sins that the neighboring tribes were practicing. And so he gives them warning. Don't you do it. And I close with this reminder. These ceremonial laws, while they are double first cousin of the moral law, and they are civil laws in a way, yet you can see this chapter dealing with ceremonial law really is a commentary on what the prophet Hosea said when he said, when Israel was a child, that is right after he was constituted as a nation, then I had to take him by the hands and teach him to walk in my way. He had given the ideal, the moral law. Do this. But God knew that with all of their historical background or lack of it, and their present situation surrounded by the enemy, and immorality and paganism, he knew full well that they would be thoroughly tempted every day not to obey. And so, in these ceremonial laws, we have God's effort to, can't you see him now, taking Ephraim, Israel, by the hand. No, now, Ephraim, mob violence is not right. I haven't said that in so many words in the moral law, but mob violence is not right. And you remember one that Jesus had to deal with, the law of retaliation. You kill me, I kill you. You hit me, and I'll hit you. You kill my dog, I kill your cat. You hit my eye, I'm going to hit your eye. Actually, that law has been misinterpreted as giving the people the right to retaliate, when actually the giving of it was for the very opposite effect. God said, now, you know human beings are sinful. You know if you hit a man, he will hit you back. And if you don't want to get hit, you better not hit him. That's all this thing is saying. Yet the Pharisees twisted that around and said, oh, God gives me a right to hit a man back if he hits me. That's what sin does. And so God is taking Ephraim by the hand to lead him along. And these various ceremonial laws, many of which are still apropos for our civilization and our society today. But my friends, we are God's people. He redeemed us. And now we say, in effect, and for God's sake, let us do it. Lord, we hear your word. All that thou hast said, we will do. Will you?